This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1. I'm David Martin Davies. Soft White Underbelly is the name of a YouTube channel run by award-winning photographer Mark Leda. The content is mainly interviews with people who live on the outskirts of what many would consider to be normal society. To give you an idea, here's a clip of a woman who goes by the name of Max Dream.
Well, first off, how did you start doing sex work?
Well, I guess it was kind of like, I really didn't want to do sex work, honestly. I was very embarrassed when I got into it, very ashamed. And I ended up like having to be an exotic dancer to pay my bills. And I had like a big issue with that because my mom was an exotic dancer. So I just thought like, she was mean because of that. Like I thought that that was what made her like this unpleasant person. And come to find out it wasn't, because like a lot of the ladies who do that type of work are very nice, some of the nicest people I've met. But you know, I was real ashamed, and then I went strip at the local strip club, and everybody I knew came see me naked, like all my bosses and like old friends and stuff, so that was interesting. And I just got like real embarrassed, and I kind of let it like take me down a very like dark path. I got into drugs and everything, and so like at a certain point I was embarrassed, and I was like, I gotta go away, like where people don't know me. And so I decided to jump in my car and drive to Northern Nevada to work at the Bunny Ranch. Before that though, let me back up. Before that, I had like definitely taken a couple clients outside of the strip club, because like every night people would be like, oh, I'll give you $1,000, come home with me. And if you didn't, like word would get around the club. And when you weren't new anymore, it was like you wouldn't make money, because like it was just so expected. Like no one said that they did it, but all the pretty girls did it. Like everybody did it.
Mark Leda joins us now to discuss his work, what he's learned along the way, and what people are saying about Soft White Underbelly. Mark, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David.
So, first of all, explain the title of your YouTube channel.
I get asked that a lot. It's just, you know, the term has been used before. I think Winston Churchill used it once, but it's really just synonymous with the most vulnerable part of an animal, you know, their belly. So it's really just meant to be some title that kind of implies that this is the most vulnerable part of our country.
The most vulnerable part of our country and our society, of people who, you know, these are not your, you know, Rotary Club type members. These are people who typically are living on the outside of our, what I quote unquote, normal society. And it seems people are amazed. They go, oh, what a revolutionary idea is to go talk to these individuals. And you do it in a way that I think is, you seem to be trying to bring out their stories, their humanity, and their struggles. So how did you come to that?
Yeah, I mean, before I get into that, I mean, I've also interviewed, like, last week in New York, I was interviewing a linguistics professor and some college students. So not everyone is a sex worker or a drug addict or a gang member. But I've certainly done more than my share of those. It's really just, I'm fascinated by humans and human behavior. And these stories, these interviews that I do, are a really intense, almost like extreme version of some of the stories that maybe you and I have, or maybe we all have. It's just these are stories that are probably pretty common. We all share the same struggles in life, but these are those stories on steroids. They're you know, the child abuse was more extreme. The repercussions from that, as they became adults, became a little more self-destructive, and it's just they're harsher, harder stories than what the majority of us deal with or go through.
So Mark, the reason why I wanted to have you on the program to talk about your work and about the people that you feature is, it seems like not enough attention is given to these individuals. And each one of them has their own heroic journey. We're all the hero of our own personal journey, and it's people may it may be so different than our own that we have a hard time imagining what's it like to be someone who is unhoused and who is dealing with a chronic drug addiction or PTSD, other issues. And you do seem to be excavating what these people have been living with and their struggle. And I thought that was really important, and I wanted to help other people see that. But I want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show and you can join the conversation. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could also tweet at us at TPRSource or email us at thesource@tpr.org. So let's go down your credentials. Let's look, because you, before you did this, you were, and you still are, you are a world-class photographer, award-winning commercial photographer. You made quite a good coin doing that work. And you did a book of portraits before you got into the video world. And but so it does seem like you had a natural, what, you were drawn to this?
Yeah, I mean, even before I ever became an advertising photographer, when I was a teenager back in Chicago, I was doing portraits of some of the people that were living on the street, mostly alcoholics back then, on Madison Avenue in Chicago. And so I've always had this fascination with these type of people. I mean, and as I got older, you know, I put it down and became an advertising photographer for decades. But then, it is maybe 10 or 11, 12 years ago now, maybe, I started doing portraits of people on Skid Row, which is the Los Angeles equivalent to what I was doing in Chicago as a teenager. And I was only doing photographs, just portraits. And I got to know some of these people, and I had a camera that did video. And I'm like, I sat her down, and it was a heroin-addicted prostitute that I knew down there, and she just told me her life story. And I thought I got lucky she told me this story that was so heartbreaking that I couldn't believe it. Like, oh my God, this is so incredible, so powerful and heartbreaking. And I just thought that was one in a million. But then I started doing more and more of these, and I realized, wow, there's a lot of stories that are tragic like this, a lot of different stories. And that's how these people get into this situation. That's how the drugs come into their lives. That's how all the other self-destructive behaviors kind of take over. And I'm still a photographer in my mind, but these interviews, these video interviews became more... What's that? I'm hearing music.
Yeah, we're just going to break. I'm sorry we cut you off on that. I wanted you to finish that idea. But you know what? Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll pick up from where you left off, talking about how you got into this and documenting the stories of people who live on Skid Row and around the nation, who they're not all down and out, but they're all interesting and they're all human. And we want to hear and get in touch with their humanity. It's important to us. So if you've got a question or comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is a one-minute break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and I'm speaking with photographer, a documentarian, Mark Leda. He has a YouTube channel called Soft White Underbelly. And so when I call you a documentarian, Mark, do you consider yourself that? Do you consider yourself someone who's doing journalism?
I mean, I guess that's what I am now. But I appreciate the realism in life. I mean, you know, there's so much in our media that's like altered, manipulated, and fake. And I just, you know, I worked in advertising for so long, and it became very, very fake after a while, right? With retouching and everything else that marketing brings. And I just wanted to do something that was the opposite of that, that wasn't retouched, wasn't altered, wasn't fixed, wasn't manipulated in any way, and just was what it was, and as real and raw as possible. And that's what I'm doing here.
I'm hearing this term more and more often, content pollution, where there's so much junk in our information stream these days. It's really hard to find good material that is interesting, that is real, that will actually leave an impression on you that you will remember after you have consumed it, you know. And I do think that your material does fall into the area of legitimate, real quality content.
Yeah, I think it's very compelling to hear these stories. Not all of them are. I mean, you have to keep in mind you're hearing one person's side of the story. I'm sure their parents or their siblings or their spouse or whoever else they're describing in their story would have a very different version of that story. And then there's the truth somewhere in the middle. But this is just storytelling. This isn't necessarily sworn affidavits of the truth. And for people to get upset, like, oh, that's not true or that's a lie, or it's like, they're probably all exaggerations or concoctions of stories or whatever. They're more like, I look at them more as character studies of people that have been through a lot. I don't look at them as being, you know, they're not in court and these need to be proven as factual. I just find it interesting to see the language and the way the body language and the way a pimp speaks, or the way a street prostitute will communicate, or the way a drug dealer will communicate. I mean, I just find these very interesting to listen to and to watch. And I think that the realism of all this is maybe why the channel's, you know, got more than 100 people watching it, which is all I ever expected it to have.
Yeah, 2.4 million subscribers.
I mean, like the video I posted today has, I think, 15,000 people that watched it. So that's a better indicator of how many people actually watch my channel. I don't think it's as popular as you're saying.
Well, those are the numbers. So for an example now, let's listen to a clip from an interview that you did that actually got a lot of attention. And this is a young girl named Patience who lives on Skid Row. Let's give it a listen.
What do you think why is everyone down here on Skid Row?
Because they did something bad.
Mm.
And some of them are young and don't want to get a job. But if that might be because they went to jail or something.
Yeah. A lot of people down here are doing drugs, too.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of keeps people from getting a job and keeps them from doing anything with their life.
Yeah.
You think there's any chance that one day you might do drugs?
Oh, no. But my older brother does, and so does my older sister, and I'm pretty sure my younger brother will, too. But I don't think I will.
So, Mark, tell us more about Patience.
Patience is a young girl whose mom has been on Skid Row for quite a while. And her, I think the story is her grandmother, or Patience's grandmother, I think, was taking care of her, and I think she got ill, and now she needed a new home to go to, and the only option her mom had was to bring her to L.A., and she lived on Skid Row in a tent, and that's where Patience has been for a while, and that's where I discovered her, and I've helped them out, and then I did a GoFundMe, and that money has helped Alicia, Patience's mom.
Right. So for that context, I do have a clip here of the mom and Patience.
All right. Patience.
Yeah.
And her mom, Alicia. So welcome, you guys. A lot of people are very curious about what Patience's mom is all about. And I think this would be a good opportunity for people to get to know who you are and what you've been going through and what you're doing and all this. So you guys have been living in a motel or hotel for the last...
Oh, for the last, like, week now.
Since we shot that video, pretty much?
Yep.
Which got you guys off of Skid Row.
Yes, and we just got approved for our housing, so another week or two at the most, and we'll be in a two-bedroom apartment. Yay.
Far from Skid Row.
Far from Skid Row.
Very far from Skid Row.
Somewhere in North Hills.
That's great. Something. Good for you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Are you excited, Patience?
Oh, yeah.
She's excited. She gets her own room.
You can take your skateboard to a nicer neighborhood.
Yeah.
So I see the comments sometimes on your video, the first one. with patients, and everyone's horrified as to what this kid's life is all about. And all I can tell you, because you're working 7 days a week.
Yes, Alicia. I work all the time.
I see you working all day, every day, and who's following you?
She's
everywhere.
Attached to my hip. She goes to work with me.
I've never seen you guys not with
together.
Each other.
Yeah,
and I rarely see
alone.
You not working.
Yeah, I always work.
Yeah, you're working nonstop at one of the stores down the street.
Mm-hmm.
You walk past my studio every day.
Yep.
And all I can say is, if I saw patients and her situation was something that was horrifying and needed to be fixed, I would scoop her up and do that. But I see how well you take care of her.
Yeah, I try my best.
I mean, you're going through a hard time right now, and I get that, and that's where Skid Row kind of comes in.
Yeah.
But you're doing your best to get off. I'm helping you a little bit, and then
the
housing that
you're
getting for everyone is going to help a lot, right?
Oh gosh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a blessing. It's a total blessing.
And so Mark, do you have an update on what's happened with patients and her mom?
Yeah, her mom went into the hospital for a medical issue she had to take care of, and patients flew up to Alaska to be with her family while her mom couldn't take care of her. But she still doesn't have housing. You know, a lot of people are promised housing in L.A. A lot of the homeless people have been promised housing, but they just can't ever make it happen. I don't know what that's all about, but I hear the story more often than I don't hear it. So I don't know exactly what the future holds for Alicia and patients. It's hard to say. You know, without housing, not a whole lot is going to happen in anyone's life there. So I've been putting her up in a hotel, motel for the last probably 2-3 months, and paying probably a lot of her expenses because she's not working now that she's been in the hospital, and I'm not sure exactly what the future holds. it's up for grabs at this point.
So what do you think is the big takeaway from hearing about patients and her mom and their struggle?
There's about 10 of them, but certainly drugs are not a great thing for a parent to do if you have a child, and Alicia does have a past with drugs. I mean, I believe she's been clean or is almost clean now. I'm not sure exactly where she stands, but she's working a full-time job, and that's going to be hard to do if you're on drugs. So I think she's probably doing pretty well. But, good parenting is probably the best thing anyone can have in their life.
Right. So when you do interviews, you kind of have a set format. You ask people to introduce yourself, where you're from, and then you ask them about their childhood. Why do you go there?
Well, I mean, I think it's such an important part of the story. I mean, really, it's just a way to break the ice and get a conversation going. And my goal is always to have the person just go from there, and I don't have to say another word. But that doesn't happen very often. It does happen sometimes, and that's great when it does. But typically, I'll have to ask them questions and try to get the answers out and try to direct it a certain way. But that information about their childhood ends up telling a story that makes everything else that follows make sense. You know, there's so many stories of child abuse, there's so many stories of neglect, there's so many stories of poverty, there's so many stories of just drug abuse from the parents and all kinds of other things, and it's tragic to see how many people are going through, or they're raising kids this way. It's pretty horrifying.
So you say that's why one of the big themes of your channel and the story, the awareness that you're trying to provide, is that there is something broken in our country and that we have to identify it, we have to look it in the eye, and we have to talk about what we're doing to our kids.
Yeah, I think that's a huge first step. It's not going to fix this generation, but it might fix future generations.
And getting people I've heard some people talking about their experience talking to you, and they described it almost as a therapy session.
Yeah, no, I've heard that a lot too. I mean, these people don't get an opportunity to talk about their stories and what they're going through because the environment they're in doesn't fly. It's too rough a neighborhood for people to go, oh, let me tell you about my broken childhood, how rough it was. No, nobody wants to hear that. Nobody's listening. So they come into my place, and all I do is listen. You know, I've done.
Yeah. I'm going to play another clip. This is from Kelly talking about her childhood.
All right, Kelly.
Yes.
Kelly, where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
Los Angeles. I mainly grew up on the east side and more so in like foster care, different cities, but mostly L.A.
So I was born in L.A. So you were in foster home at what age?
My first time ever going foster care, I was about 2 months, and it was because my mother had called DCFS on herself for abusing me. I was told it was postpartum depression on top of her already.
So your mom called child services on herself?
She called child services on herself because she would like abuse me. My grandma told me stories how she would abuse me as a baby. Like I have pictures of me with black eyes and 2 months, you know. And so basically that's the first time I ever got took away at 2 months. And then my grandma got me.
Wow.
But I was still in the system. She got me system-wise.
Got it. And how was your childhood, generally?
It was pretty bad, but at the same time, like, I was always the type of person that tried to make, like, you know, I like to laugh a lot. I laughed a lot. But my childhood was pretty tragic.
What kind of stuff? Abuse?
I've been abused, I've been raped, I've been molested, I've been tortured.
And Mark, that's not the only individual that you interviewed who gave that kind of a story.
No, it's not. Sadly, it's not. There's probably hundreds and hundreds of them.
Where do you think the failure is happening?
I'm sorry?
Where is the failure coming from?
Well, I mean, it's not as simple like, oh, it's that, you know, I want to say it's drugs. It's not, you know, the layers to this problem. I mean, you look at the homeless people on the street. So you want to blame homelessness. We got to get housing for people. But behind the homelessness is drugs. And behind the drug addiction is mental health issues. And behind the mental health problems that exist are all the abuse that happens in people's childhoods. And behind that, you can blame poverty, lack of education, lack of good role models. The layers of this go on and on and on, but certainly the way that a lot of inner city kids are raised without good role models, you know, dad's in prison, mom's on drugs, they're in the foster system, there's some abuse that happens either at home or in the foster system, that's a story that's told over and over and over, especially on my channel.
Yeah, and so it does seem like, well, the first step is to recognize, identify, listen, I mean, view these videos, not as this online freak show, but, you know, these are people. We are getting a chance to see what their life is like. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. Do want to let you know you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're speaking with Mark Leda. He's an award-winning photographer. He's the director of Soft White Underbelly, a YouTube channel that looks at some grim realities that we have here in America. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're taking a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Hi, I'm Kim Johnson, producer of The Source. Our team is passionate about creating a forum for constructive conversations on a wide range of topics that matter to you and your community. We're here to help break down issues and hold our leaders accountable, to provide timely coverage and crucial context, and to bring you, the listener, into the conversations that are shaping San Antonio. Some programs may speak to you on a personal level, while others give you the opportunity to learn something new or just think about things a little differently. Now more than ever, it's important to stand up for journalism that insists on truth, transparency, and accountability. This is why we're asking you to make an investment in news that you can trust, an investment in context, accuracy, and thoughtful in-depth analysis. While it's free to tune in, it takes real financial resources to make this programming possible. If you find value in this kind of programming and are able to do so, please consider supporting The Source and this station by donating or becoming a member of Texas Public Radio right now on TPR.org. Thanks.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Mark Leda. He is an award-winning photographer. He has a YouTube channel called Soft White Underbelly. Features many, many, many interviews with people from all walks of life. And some of them are sex workers, some of them are drug users, some of them are college students. It runs the gambit. If you go to that site and start looking at it, you better be prepared because there's just an endless amount of interesting material there to look at. But Mark, I want to get to your mission. You know, your mission. You're not just doing this for clicks. I mean, it seems like you have a defined idea of something that you want to communicate. It seems to me like you want people, like, who are viewing this from the comfort of our homes and our air conditioning and our satisfied lives, to be able to understand at least a little bit better what other people are struggling with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I used to drive through, you know, you'd see a panhandler on a intersection when you're driving, and I remember a friend of mine who I've known for decades reminded me that, you know, we were at an intersection stopped and there was a panhandler, and I just said something about, like, just get a job. You know, I didn't say it to the person, but I said it to my friend who was in the car. And, that's how I viewed these kind of people decades ago. But after doing 3,000 or more of these interviews, and I've, you know, heard the stories and how they got down there and what's behind all these stories, I see it so differently now. You know, I see the things they went through as children that I never had to, that would break anyone, you know? I mean, there are people that climb out of these kind of childhoods, but that's one out of 50, I think. I think the majority of the people that go through all the childhood trauma, all the neglect, all the abuse that these kids put up with end up using drugs, and that leads them to a situation where their lives just unravel, you know.
Now, you've got a lot of videos, but it is amazing to me how many people have watched the video of a family from West Virginia that you had gotten to know. And before we listen to this video, can you talk about the family that you got to know in Odd, West Virginia?
Yeah, it's the Whitaker family in a town called Odd, West Virginia, which is odd enough, right? But a police officer in that area, you know, told me about them and took me there. And what it is, I think there are 14 siblings that whose parents were, and I've heard different stories. You know, according to some people, it's their parents were double first cousins, but then I've also seen documentation of some of the kids had parents that were brother and sister. But I don't know what the truth is, and it's at some point it becomes too much to like try to explore that and get to the truth of it all. There's something that was definitely not right in the household or in the environment. But in any case, there was at least double first cousins or brother and sister that were the parents of most of these kids. And they're severely disabled, mostly mentally. Not all of them. There's a couple that you would not describe that way that I've met. But Freddie, Ray, Timmy, Lorraine, they're unable to speak. They just grunt or make crazy noises or bark like a dog, and their behavior is
right.
Not what you and I would call normal. I mean, I took them to the Walmart recently, and Ray urinated in the ladies' room, and then he went to the bathroom in the middle of the parking lot, and I think he did some other things that were just. That's why they don't take him out in public. And it was my idea to take him to Walmart, but I didn't realize that he never really gets out in public.
Here's some audio of your interaction with the Whitakers.
The sandwich. So you grew up here in Odd, West Virginia, your whole life. And your family, you lost your brother since I was here last.
Right. Just wanted to give people an idea of what that scene was like. But I want people to also understand that you didn't just show up one day. I mean, you've met them, you've been around them back and forth for over a decade.
Yeah, I first met them probably about 12, 14 years ago. And every time I'm in that area, I stop by and see them. And I've helped them out financially a lot. My viewers have made donations, and I've done GoFundMes for them. I think they've received $60,000 or $70,000, which helped them fix up their home a little bit. Right now, they're saving money to hopefully buy the neighbor's house, which is bigger and a sounder structure than what they're living in right now. So we'll see that. They bought a car recently, which one of their brothers can drive. So
the accusation is that you are exploiting these people.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I am. Every single person I interview is being exploited in one way. You're exploiting me right now.
Yeah, and I thought about that. You know, and I talk to people all the time, and we get them to tell their stories. But it's if the mission is to, and I think we're aligned in those ways, is that we want to exploit their humanity. We want people to see them for their humanity.
Well, the majority of the reaction to all my videos, and the Whitaker video is a good example, is compassion, kindness, and love, and understanding, I think. And you know, most people didn't know that these stories existed. You know, like the Whitaker family is maybe an extreme example, but there's no one I've ever interviewed that didn't willingly come in. They come to me now and ask if they can do an interview. So, I mean, I don't know how that's exploiting anyone when they're begging me to do it, and I say, okay, sure, I'll do it, and I'll pay you for it as well. And I pay people much more than I probably should. But I, you know, I get called, oh, you're exploiting people. But I think that's there's negative and positive ways of looking at anything. And some people are predisposed to be very positive, and other people are very set on being negative and knocking things down. And that's just, it's human nature, and you can't convince someone who's negative to see things more positively. I just don't believe it's possible. I haven't seen it happen. I've given people a really sound argument for why this person willingly came in, came back for a second interview and a third one, and wanted to do it each of those three times, and had a great experience each time and said it's helped them in multiple different ways, but I'm exploiting them. So I don't know what that's all about, but I get called, my work gets called exploitive quite a bit.
Your work also shatters stereotypes, people who think they know how the world works and how things are sorted. If they watch your channel, they will find out they know nothing. There are people out there that will shock and surprise you and fill you with wonder and make you examine your own beliefs about the world. I'm thinking about Stephen. He is in a relationship, an interracial relationship, and I guess it was also West Virginia. And I'm going to play a clip of that.
See, I used to do insulin, the hypodermic needles. And I went to my doctors and I was like, y'all got to change this. Because, well, I looked out my window over here one day and I saw this old woman and this old man going through the dumpster, taking out needles, like hypodermic needles. And I that was before my leg got cut off. And I went out there and I told him, I said, y'all may not want to be taking my needles. I said, that means I'll be positive. Because I don't want to see nobody get infected. So I went to my doctors I had them change it to the pins. That way I don't have to deal, it won't be on my conscience that somebody grabbed a needle from the dumpster and got HIV due to me, even though those that I don't know is doing, taking my needles. Because that's a, if you don't understand, it's a hard thing to carry, burden, knowing that if you give somebody HIV, I mean, you change somebody's life.
Steven's partner is Randy, and when they look at each other, you can see the deep love that they have for each other. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, they're a couple in Charleston, West Virginia, who I met, who have everything. They check all the boxes. They're gay, they're interracial, HIV positive, drug addicted, homeless. I mean, they were
disabled.
Living in a And disabled. Yeah, he, Steve is missing his leg, or legs, I think. I'm not sure. No, one leg. And they're hillbillies on top of it. So it's like they check all the boxes in terms of what people love to discriminate against. But they're happy. They seem happy, and they're good, and they're good for each other. And you know, it's just an interesting story.
And they've said to you that as long as they have each other, they can face any challenge.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting example how love can conquer all.
And so last we heard, they were being evicted from their home. Any updates?
Yeah. There's an update on my channel. They got a new place, and there's a second follow-up video that's on my channel.
There's a lot of videos there.
Yeah, there's over 1,000, I think.
Yeah. So, okay, we got to take one more break. I do have a text from Joe. He says, your guest today hopefully provides a glimpse of what it's like to live in a very different world so people can understand and think about it. After all, these folks are someone's son, daughter, brother, sister, mother, father. Okay, Joe, thank you for that message. We'll get a reaction to that. And we have a caller on the line. Jesse, we're going to get your call on the air when we come back from this break. Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we'll come back and continue speaking with Mark Leda about Soft White Underbelly on YouTube in just 1 minute. Stick with us. Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How do you judge a hero? You judge a hero by their struggle, the things that they have had to overcome in order to survive and maintain and go on and continue to produce, you know, hang on to their humanity, embrace their family, find love, somehow deal with the sanity, create sanity in an insane world. And those are the things that you'll find when you look at Mark Leda's YouTube channel, Soft White Underbelly. If you have a question or a comment, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Jesse on the phones. And Jesse, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, David. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think the Soft White Underbelly project is incredible. I'm a clinical social worker in San Antonio, Texas, and these are the sorts of stories that we hear all day, every day. And the thing about the Soft White Underbelly interviews is that these are folks really on the fringes and at the extremes of society. And there are a lot of people who are not on the fringes of society that have had a lot of the same experiences. So I just wanted to say, you know, to anyone who's listening, these people might be the people standing next to you in the line at the grocery store or at the gas station, or they might be working in the post office. So I hope that this project increases awareness of the effects of trauma and adverse childhood experiences. So thanks very much.
Jesse, thank you for your call. Mark Leda, you have a reaction?
Yeah, no, what Jesse said is exactly right. Because as I said at the beginning of our talk, these stories, you know, it's very easy to separate and say, oh, those people are a bunch of freaks and it's a freak show and they have these terrible problems that don't relate to any of us. But I think, as Jesse said, the majority of us have versions of these stories, you know, just different. The details might be different, or the extremity might, you know, how extreme it was might be different. But these are very common stories in our society, I think.
Frequently, people look at individuals who are unhoused and dealing with drug addiction, and others who are maybe sex workers, and they may, you know, have this reaction saying, "This is an individual who is not of use to society, and if they were to be exterminated, then we would be better off for it. They wouldn't hurt us at all." You know, that is a cold, harsh, ugly, fascist way of looking at the world, but. Do you find that these are actually our people who do, they're part of our society and therefore they have value, Mark?
Yeah, I mean that's another 3-hour conversation there. But if you listen to these talks, you can take a gang member, and gang members are hated because they're, or pimps even, but let's take a gang member. If you hear the whole story of how they grew up and what their childhood was like and why they joined the gang at 13 years old, you start to understand that they didn't have any other options. The world they were living in, that they grew up in, didn't give them a whole lot of opportunities to do anything other than figure out a way to survive at 13. And that leads you down a certain path. And, you know, the gang becomes their family, and that in order to exist in the gang, you have to do certain things, and those certain things will often kill you or put you in prison for the rest of your life. But, you know, every once in a while somebody makes it out, and I'll interview that person, or I'll interview even a young gang member, and it just becomes a very real wake-up of what's really going on in our country and how difficult some people have it. You know, I think by creating awareness and understanding of what's going on, we can all have a little more compassion for each other.
Do you think if you got people from the so-called straight world and sat them down and they were able to be as honest with you as...
That's the big part right there. They won't be as honest, but yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, trying to get them to be as honest with you as the subjects that you have are with you. They're very honest. They give it to you. You know, as far as we can tell, you know, they're not sugarcoating anything.
Well, they have nothing to lose, and they hold on to these secrets, and a lot of these stories have never been told anywhere before. I mean, so many people that I've interviewed said, yeah, I've never told anybody this stuff before. But they also have nothing to lose, whereas my neighbor and your neighbor probably have a lot to lose. They'll be divorced if they tell you that, and they'll lose their job if they tell you this, and they'll be ostracized if they admit that. So you won't hear... You won't see a whole lot of those type of people on my channel because they just won't open up. They have too much to lose.
When the people that you do talk to who are from, how do you describe the people that you have in your channel?
I just think they're interesting. There are a lot of people that have a victim mentality, and that's how they ended up in this situation in the first place. But I wouldn't say they're all victims. You know, some of these people are fighters, and they're trying to figure out a way out. But the cards, you know, everything was against them from the beginning.
Yeah. That point, I want to play one last clip, and this is from Hines, and he is a homeless veteran.
So at a young age, at 17, I signed up for the Army. You know, I signed up, and I went. I know when I went into the military, it was my MOS with. 11 Bravo is infantry, you know. My cousin and my brother, you know, they went off on me about being, you know, infantry. But I had made a statement, say, if I do go to Vietnam, I want to go in there with some action. I don't want to go to be a clerk or a truck driver, you know, or a cook. You know, I want to see some action. And when I got over there and seen the action, boy, I wish I was a cook, you know. I stayed in Vietnam for about 18 months, you know. I had a lot of homeboys that got killed, you know. And I seen a lot of stuff in Vietnam, did a lot of stuff, things that we hardly ever talk about, you know. Because a lot of stuff, like we can say that we can have a conversation with yourself, you know. But, it's, you know, it's real stuff, you know. And like I turned 18 in Fort Polk, Louisiana. I turned 19 in Vietnam, you know. I was a youngster, you know, and then when I got over there seeing all this, you know, seeing this, all this death, you know, it was a trip, you know, it messed me up in the mind. That's the first time I used drugs. I never used drugs. I didn't grow up around drugs, you know. But I got to Nam, when I got to Nam, I started, you know, using drugs.
He, PTSD and a veteran. And still struggling to this day. And what is he, like 70?
Yeah, he's at least, yeah, he's an older gentleman, but he's living on Skid Row. He's got a roof over his head, but that's all you can say for his financial situation. He's barely a step above homelessness.
And people on their comments about Hines saying, you know, he's a veteran. How can we let this happen? Why do, and people, they act like they didn't know we had these problems all around us all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that people don't understand when they see my channel. They think, oh my God, we need to save this person. I'm like, you're choosing one person out of about, there's 7,000 more of them. just in L.A., you know, and every other city's got them as well. But it's just not right to serve to save one person and leave everyone else behind because they didn't get the luck to be on my channel. You know, it's just sometimes I have a real hard time with people say, oh, we need to save that person. I'm like, you don't realize there's 50 more just right down the street. And we're going to ignore all those 50 because you don't know them. But the one that gets the help is the one who just happened to get into my studio. That's just not, that's not the way it should go.
Do you want the viewers to be watching with empathy?
Oh, of course. I mean, we just do everything with empathy and compassion, no?
The comments can be kind of rough. Why do you leave them open?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sometimes I'm tempted to just turn them off and leave them off. I don't know. I mean, there have been some videos where I just turn them off. I'm just fed up with all the hate. And I could do it across the board and do it to everything. I think my viewers would complain, but it's sad how many people love to judge and hate.
But it does seem like there are people there who are offering, you know, forgiveness, or they want to be part of the conversation. They do want to tell their own story sometimes. So
yeah, no, I mean, you get both. You get people who want to, you know, the majority of my comments are very positive. They're very positive. It's just sometimes you get some haters in there and they just love to spread hate and negativity. What are you going to do?
So this idea of just going up to people or having a way to communicate with them and sit them down and talk to them and allow them to tell their story, people are acting like you have reinvented the wheel, that this is a crazy idea and you're a brave man to go do it, to talk to these people. That in and of itself, I think, tells us a lot.
Yeah, no, it's just listening. It's just listening.
Have you been surprised of how this project has impacted you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it's created a lot of, you know, I've said before, it's a crash course in empathy and compassion. Just you start hearing all these stories, and you can't help but see things differently. You just can't help it.
And what's next?
Oh, I'd like to spread, you know, to kind of spread out across the country and do more. You know, every corner of every state has stories like this, and I think it'd be interesting to see what somebody from Montana or from Texas or from Maine or Oregon would, how the stories differ, how you know, there's interesting things going on all over our country to look at.
Mark Leda, he's an award-winning photographer. He's the director of Soft White Underbelly. It's a video series on a YouTube channel. Check it out. Mark, it was great talking with you. Appreciate it.
You too, David. Thank you very much.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Jackie Velez and Xiaowen Chan. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.